Coming up on New York Now, the outgoing legislative director for the League of Women Voters reflects on three decades of work at the state capitol.
We worked very hard for it. It was a large coalition, but we were fighting the tobacco industry, and we won.
Plus, Jimmy Vielkind of Politico New York and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio join the Reporters Roundtable.
Albany has done nothing, absolutely nothing, to respond to this scandal.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. If you are a longtime follower of New York State politics, you won't want to miss our interview with Barb Bartoletti of the League of Women Voters. We'll have that for you a little bit later on. Up first, though, let's send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who moderates our discussion today at the Reporters Roundtable.
Oh, what a week. I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable to make some sense of it by Jimmy Vielkind of Politico New York and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Oh, Wednesday night, the legislature wraps up, kind of, leaving undone a couple of big ticket items, the biggest ticket of which is mayoral control, the continuation of mayoral control over New York City public schools, and several dozen revenue extenders that municipalities are really going to miss once we get into the fall. A sputtering end of session, Jimmy?
It was a sputtering end of session. And one thing that was striking to me being there late on Wednesday was that no one really knew, and a lot of people really didn't care, whether there was going to be some sort of grand deal, to use the phrase of Senate IDC leader Jeff Klein, up until 11 p.m. So both legislative houses, and I was staying in the state Senate, were just cranking through their normal end of session priorities. There was a last minute surprise with the nomination of Joe Loda to return to run the Metropolitan Transportation Authority.
Much needed, I would add.
Yeah, but Senate Deputy Majority Leader John DeFrancisco had said earlier, he's like, well, we don't know if we're going to get a deal. If we do, we'll maybe act on it. And if we don't, we won't. And then sure enough, they just went home.
Well, what I got from them is they did not want a repeat of the budget, that agonizing 8 days where it was uncertain and they didn't know what was going to happen and the budget was 8 days late. Like all the lawmakers said to me this week, we're going to leave Wednesday no matter what. We are not going to just stay here. And some of them said they would come back if there's a deal. So they kind of made this dramatic show of we're digging in, you know, this is our position, now we're leaving. But in reality, they're going to have to come back.
The buzz was, Jimmy, I think you were noting that you were getting a lot of buzz that there was talk about coming back as soon as Friday, which is, we're talking Friday morning, so conceivably they still could come back before our viewers watch this show.
Yeah, for several hours on Thursday, they thought they were coming back Friday. That's how kind of chaotic it is about what's going to happen next.
One thing that was really striking to me about these last few days was the absence of Governor Cuomo.
Completely.
He's been known as the deal maker, and I've covered him since he was inaugurated in 2011, and this year was abnormal in that they didn't get it done. So viewers of this program know the core Cuomo narrative, which is that I got it done. I made government work. We reached across the aisle. We forged compromise. We made it work. Here, that didn't happen. And so the inherent message is a return to Albany dysfunction, which Cuomo said that he ended. Now, the governor claims he was working behind the scenes, and from what I gather, he was. But the fact that we didn't hear him talking about any end-of-session issues in the weeks leading up to this one, the fact that we didn't see him engage more forcefully or publicly on behalf of either side of this dispute on mayoral control with the charter schools and the tax extenders, I think made a big difference. And as a result, here we are in limbo for coming weeks with people starting to worry about real consequences.
Excellent segue, because on Thursday, the day after the legislature may be wrapped up, the governor held a Red Room press conference, his first in 2 months, I think, where he basically blamed everybody except, of course, himself. He blamed the assembly primarily for the failure of achieving a deal on mayoral control. He blamed the city of New York for not sufficiently funding the transit system. He even, when asked questions about the failure to achieve procurement reform, which the governor never wanted to get, he essentially blamed State Controller Tom DiNapoli for being, as it were, asleep at the switch for what the governor termed the biggest scandal of the year, involved someone who was involved in oversight of the pension fund.
I guess a lone person in the pension department, which no one had ever heard of, and we're not really sure what he was talking about there.
It was a big deal back in December.
Yeah, he brought in the name of Alan Hevesy, the former controller who went to jail. He was just really trying to kind of smear the state controller, who he doesn't like. And he doesn't like the fact that the legislature wants a bill that would give the controller oversight, what the governor is doing. The controller used to oversee these contracts, and then he lost that power, and they want to give it back to him. So that's what that was about. But I think the governor was hoping he could just ignore the session, the end of session, because it wasn't going all that well for him, and it would just go away. But I think he found that, no, he's the governor, and people are going to blame him anyway. So he felt like he had to get out there and put the blame on everyone else first.
It was a virtuoso spin session. I really thought it was. I loved the blaming of Tom DiNapoli because it was completely unrelated to the task at hand. Because the fact of the matter is this. The governor's top aides were indicted. They're going to federal trial for a massive bid rigging scheme that goes to the core of his economic redevelopment efforts across upstate New York. And the fact that in this six-month legislative session, despite all the chest thumping from senior Republicans and Democrats, despite a push from the left and the right, Albany has done nothing, absolutely nothing, to respond to this scandal. And in fact, we've poured another $200+ million down the same rabbit hole that gave us all these problems.
But I agree with all that, but by far, I think we will all agree that in the pantheon of last-minute legislative surprises, the surprise legislation that would change the name or pick a name for the new Tappan Zee Bridge replacement to name it after Mario Cuomo might be my favorite.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right. It was so important that he had to give a message of necessity. And the Senate did approve it, but the Assembly, I think, showing that there's a lot of tension between Governor Cuomo and Assembly Democrats, left without approving it. The one little wrinkle in that is that the Tappan Zee Bridge is currently named for former Governor Malcolm Wilson. And
the old one, the one that's going to go down.
Yeah, that's right. But nevertheless, his family is upset that his name is being taken off of there. So it's getting kind of complicated. Perhaps they could have finessed it by talking to Malcolm Wilson's descendants and maybe having something named for him. So it's kind of in a weird way, it's blowing up in the governor's face. I don't think anybody would disagree that something should be named for Mario Cuomo. Many people consider him a great governor, but just the way this whole thing was handled at the last minute, it seems kind of strange.
Yeah, think about this, right? If you're 1 million school children in New York City, no action on mayoral control. Mm-hmm. $1.8 billion worth of tax extenders, no action. But good job, Albany. You had, in the dark of night, after the sun went down on the year's longest day, a bill come forward with a designated message of necessity, despite robust discussion within the Hudson Valley about competing proposals to name this bridge. Some argue for Pete Seeger, some argue for the Purple Heart Bridge. But nope, we've shown Albany can just ram a proposal through in the dark of night, even when other business is left unfinished. I think optically this looks terrible, and I think they're really going to regret this.
But I think, and we should also point out that a message of necessity is theoretically supposed to be used in a dire emergency when you have to pass something because, you know, something terrible has happened or you're responding to something. But they use it pretty cavalierly around
here. Political necessity.
It was a major political necessity that they did that, I guess.
It's amazing that anything else was happening on Thursday, but it was the first day of the State Education Department proceedings in the question of whether or not Carl Paladino, 2010 gubernatorial Republican candidate and member of the Buffalo School Board, should get bounced from that panel.
Yeah,
Karen, you were there.
It's really unprecedented. The State Education Commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, is holding a hearing, which is kind of like a trial. It's going to last for several days, and it's whether Carl Paladino should be kicked off of the school board for leaking information in private executive sessions. But really, the overlying issue is Carl Paladino in late December made some comments that many viewed as racist about President Obama and Mrs. Obama. And even though the hearing is not about that. It seems to be brought in, even Paladino's defense is bringing it in. Former Attorney General Dennis Vacco is representing Paladino. And he brought it in saying this trial is not about this, but we think it's a way for the Buffalo School Board to get Carl because they don't like him. But Carl, even though the remarks he made were very inappropriate, he had a First Amendment right to make these statements, and he shouldn't be punished by being thrown off the school board.
All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Jimmy Vielkind of Politico New York and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio, who you will hear from in just a moment, because the end of the legislation will mark a conclusion of sorts for Barbara Bartoletti of the State League of Women Voters, one of the most dogged advocates for ethics reform at the state capitol and a frequent guest on New York Now. Karen sat down with Bartoletti for an exit interview.
Barbara Bartoletti, welcome back to New York Now.
Oh, thank you, Karen.
And I have to apologize to everyone because I have a cold and my voice sounds terrible. But
well, you just sound like Katharine Hepburn.
Well, that's nice. I just really wanted to do this interview because you're retiring.
I am.
Threatened to retire for so many years, and we didn't believe you. But apparently it's for real now, right?
It is for real now. It definitely is for real. It's been, it's kind of an end of an era. It's been almost 40 years. I have been legislative director with the League since 1988, but I actually worked for Family Planning Advocates the 4 years before that, and I've been with the League.
Which is the lobbying arm of Planned Parenthood.
Of Planned Parenthood, right, yeah. Yes, that was my first and only, actually, paid lobbying job, because my years with the League have been like so many other League people across the state, across the nation. We are volunteers.
Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to start off with. First of all, just to say it's a big loss for Albany that you're leaving, I think, helped me out a lot through the years, always providing me with a quote when I needed one with all the crazy stuff going on. But let's start at the beginning when you took this job. As you mentioned, it was unpaid. That's kind of a sign of the times, right? Because I don't think that a woman would be hired and not paid.
Not today. In the League, the young woman who was following me is paid staff. But my generation, probably the last generation, obviously, but my generation was filled with women who were didn't need to have that second income. Mm. We were home. In my case, I was home with small children. And my next door neighbor, who was became a very close friend, she said to me one day while I was, you know, had little kids around my knees and tired of talking about, you know, nothing. And she said, oh, I have just the place for you. She said, oh, you should come with me to a League of Women Voters meeting. Hmm. Well, I didn't know anything about that. And she said, and it's at the library in Del Mar, and they take care of children. You know, we have a babysitter that comes in while the meeting is going on. So I thought, oh, this sounds interesting. Hmm. I went to that first meeting. The women were so smart. They were so informed. And this was mainly about local issues. But I thought, oh, my goodness, this is a whole new world. And I had that opportunity then to join the League, got involved with a study that back then we did two-year studies. This was a study called Women in the Law. And Karen, I was hooked. And that was that. And about, oh, a year later, they said, well, gee, you live right here in the Capitol. The woman that was doing the job of lobbying for the League was going to go on and run for office, and you can't do both. Mm-hmm. So I followed her for 2 weeks, and she said, good job, you're on your own.
Wow.
And that was many, many, many years ago.
And so then you were at State Capitol during the session following, you know, the governor, the lawmakers.
Oh, six governors, five assembly speakers, and five majority leaders in the time I've been there.
How was it different then?
Oh, my. Back then, I came in under Warren Anderson. He was the majority leader of the Senate, Republican. From Binghamton, which is why we have 88 now.
Yes, that's right, the superhighway built.
That's right.
So that he could get
Back and forth to the Capitol more quickly.
Without going on the back roads.
That's right. Yeah. And but he was a real statesman. I mean, it was a different time, a different period. People played tennis together, the different parties. They socialized more. They spoke about issues, but they didn't speak against one another. It was just a different time.
You don't see that now.
And we don't see that now, which is so unfortunate. And I think it has a lot to do with some with the 24-hour cable news that is constant. And I think the biggest thing, and maybe it's just me because I so don't like it, is social media. I mean, there's all of this Facebook, and the things you'd say on Facebook, you'd never say face-to-face to anyone. Mm-hmm. Or Twitter's a little better, yeah. I guess. But I grew up in an era where it was face-to-face lobbying. It was building relationships with people, building trust. And an awful lot of that has broken down now.
But there's still value in that, right? Doing the face-to-face kind of lobbying.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh,
you could
yes.
not do your job. Whoever succeeds, you can't do it just on Twitter and Facebook, right?
And
I mean, part of it is you have to be there and you have to talk to people still, right?
That's right. And that's what I've tried to instill in her is you still need to form relationships, be they that with your coalition partners, and we work frequently in coalitions, or relationships with a legislator. Because what we are as lobbyists is we are resource people. And if a legislator can't trust what you're telling him or her, they won't come to you again and it'll be much harder to do your job. So you do have to form those relationships. And that's the part I really liked. I've known over the course of almost 40 years, I've known almost everybody in the legislature. Now there are a few people that have just come in this year because I knew this was going to be my last mm-hmm. session that I've encouraged the young woman who's been with me for 2 years. I've encouraged her, Jennifer, you go set up relationships with these new women, particularly in the assembly, because they aren't going to see me after this. They're going to see you. So we've done some of that already.
But back to the old days for a moment, as you were saying, they were more collegial. And I remember those days. But in a way, they're also more corrupt. You had lobbyists buying everybody
yes.
dinner.
Yes.
There was a lot of backroom dealing. I mean, certainly it's still going on, but you don't have the lobbyists giving the huge, you know, essentially gifts to the lawmakers. That's changed,
That has changed, and that was primarily due to We the Good Government groups, much to the dismay of the restaurants in Albany, because that was their business. I mean, they got...
That's right. I've heard you're credited with bringing down the restaurant business in Albany.
Yes. Well, it used to be $75 for breakfast, $75 for lunch, and $75 for dinner. Mm-hmm. And so the restaurants probably have lost, and I say now, which is, I have no idea if it's really true or not, but I say now, if you want to see legislators after session, you have to go to Applebee's, because they aren't going to be at
the bargain places.
That's right. Mm. They're not going to be at Jack's, or they're not going to be at some of these
prime
places. Yes, because they just don't want to spend their per diems that way. Mm-hmm. It used to be they could pocket their per diems.
Per diems is the daily allowance that they get for being lawmakers, yeah.
And they could pocket that and still have a very nice dinner and a couple of bottles of wine, and now they can't do that anymore. So some lawmakers have actually quipped that they now eat popcorn for dinner out of the hotels that they stay in. I don't know how true that is either.
I'm not that sorry for them. Sorry. So you've seen a lot of scandals coming out. So what is the worst scandal, the most memorable time that you've seen in Albany?
I think the two things I remember, well, there are a couple of things I remember most. I remember the coup with Bragman and Silver.
Oh,
and
yeah.
the fact that after it
assembly.
Failed in the assembly,
former
Syracuse,
Sheldon Silver and Michael Bragman was the majority leader then. That's right.
That's right. And when he realized he had lost that coup, he came to the floor of the assembly, and that was before you had cell phones. And so the assembly was just absolutely packed. People sitting in the windowsills, reporters mostly, people sitting in the aisles. And for 2 hours, the galleries were all full. In 2 hours, he just put all of the dirty linen from the Republicans, things that happened in conference that the public necessarily wouldn't know, he just put it all out there, aired it all. And for that, he ended up sitting in an office right next to South Swan Street in the middle of winter, where his receptionist had to wear a parka. I mean, that's what happened
to
you. And then he left.
His coup failed.
That's right.
Partly because he announced it 5 days before it was going to happen and gave the other side time
to
talk people
out. And that's the old adage, if you're going to kill the king, kill him quickly. He didn't. And that's what happened. Silver got all the lobbyists lined up and all the labor unions, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and the coup failed. And then, of course, there was the next coup, which was in the Senate, and that was the Four Amigos. Remember the Four Amigos?
Oh,
I think all of them are now in jail.
That was quite a summer. Yes.
That was a whole summer I remember specifically was sitting in the gallery and having to go through two pledges of allegiance, two gavels in, two prayers.
Because you had two competing groups who claimed
Claimed they were in power. And that's when they put Andrea Stewart Cousins, now the minority leader of that conference,
that's right.
They would bring her in at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning and put her up on the podium, figuring, I'm sure, figuring that they weren't going to manhandle a woman to throw her off the podium. And so George Winner, now he's no longer here either, not deceased, but no longer here.
Former Republican
and
senator.
He had his own little gavel, and she had the big gavel, and they would gavel, and then he'd gavel, and then she'd gavel, and it was a spectacle. It was just, and then Mr. Espada with the key to the front doors, I have the key.
Yeah, former Senate Leader Pedro Espada, who's now
in prison. Yes.
And it seems to me that it seemed like it was thundering and lightning that entire summer, too, or maybe I'm just like conflating it all.
Well, it probably did inside and outside.
Yeah, that was quite a summer.
It was just one thing after another, and then, of course, one amigo after another went one way or the other, and you never knew who was actually in control.
Yeah.
And then we had the next person in the Senate who got expelled from the Senate for possible, and I think he wasn't convicted of a felony, but certainly the Senate expelled him, and he had to, and everybody was there in the galleries again, or at least I was.
Senator Hiram Monserrat.
Monserrat.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
And the state troopers were waiting outside the doors to the chamber, and they, you know, escorted him through the, and people, you know, cameras following, and escorted him over to the LOB, took his key, let him get his personal things, and took his key. And I mean, these are the things that really stick out. Now,
those were the days, weren't they?
Those were the days when you never knew what was going to happen next.
So what was your best day at the Capitol?
Oh, the best day, I'll tell you, was in 1995. George Pataki was governor. Joe Bruno was majority leader. And we passed what is probably the most significant bill to affect everyday New Yorkers ever since I had been there. And that was passage of the Clean Indoor Air Act .2. We had already passed the Clean Indoor Air Act, which of course was all about smoking, and it was all about the tobacco industries. Mm-hmm. And along with my colleague Blair Horner,
One of the first in the nation to ban smoking indoors.
And so that the .2 was actually banning it in restaurants and bars, so that you no longer had to worry about coming out of a bar or restaurant, you know, smelling like tobacco. And that was probably the biggest achievement. We worked very hard for it. It was a large coalition, but we were fighting the tobacco industry, and we won. And it has affected the daily lives of every single person in this state, and probably has affected across the country, because we were a leader in getting rid of secondhand, quote-unquote, secondhand smoke. That was probably my biggest accomplishment that had an impact on everyday life.
So you have done a lot, but what's left undone?
Oh, my.
What are you leaving behind that you wish could have gotten done?
Oh, two things. One, in increasing voting rights in this state. We don't have voting suppression in this state, but we have barriers that are just so 19th century instead of 21st century. People should be able to vote early in this state, and they can't.
And you can't.
There should be automatic voter registration.
In fact, as we found out in the primary, you have to even change your party many, many months before there's a primary.
That's right. Now, some of these things I do think we're going to be able to get, maybe next year, maybe the year after, but we should be able to get early voting. And, of course, the other issue is good government reform, which we haven't been able to get. Primarily ethics reform. Just doesn't happen.
Well, here we are. We're sitting here. It's the end of session. The two former legislative leaders are facing jail time. Nine of Governor Cuomo's closest associates are going to trial later this year. And, you know, as we're recording this, they're saying that they're not going to do any reform of how they do economic development contracts, how the lawmakers get outside income. I mean, what do you think of that?
I think they like the status quo, and I think that they don't think this is high enough on the voters' list to do. You know, it's mostly don't take my health care away from me, make sure my kids get well educated, lower my property taxes, and protect, you know, my environment. But when you get down to 13th, it's, oh, yeah, and there's ethics, too. But legislators know that it isn't going to be a reason why they don't get reelected. It's those things at the top. So they have no incentive to really do it.
So not a priority for them.
Not a priority for them. The status quo is much more a priority.
Well, on that note, we'll have to let you go. Hopefully you can come back sometime. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you, Karen.
And good luck in your retirement.
Thank you.
Hope you have fun.
I do intend to.
All right, the official end of the legislative session is upon us, and we're asking you to be the teacher right now. What grade would you give the executive and legislative branches of government for 2017? Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last time we posed this question, are you satisfied with the amount of time Governor Cuomo spends in Albany? 68% said no. We have time for just a few responses here. Stacy in Albany said, most executives don't spend the majority of their time at corporate headquarters. I'm sure the governor can get work done regardless of his physical location. And finally, Anthony in Eastchester, watching on WNET, told us he should govern more from Albany rather than spending taxpayers' money globetrotting all over the state to run for president as an unannounced candidate. We appreciate everyone for taking the time to vote. Once again, the address is nynow.org if you want to tell us your opinion this week. Our website is where you can stream any of our past programs, plus follow links to us on social media sites like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll also find a pathway to the Capital Confidential blog, also found at timesunion.com. And that will do it for us this week. We leave you today with scenes from deep inside the Catskill Park in lovely Greene County. For Casey Seiler, I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.